You're listening to KDNK's Public Affairs program for Land's Sake. I'm your host, Bill Kite, and today we're privileged to have with us Sarah Johnson of the Wild Rose Education, and welcome to the Land's Sake.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me.
It's been a while since you've been on, and you're fresh from being outdoors and enjoying the outside, so...
And I just heard my first canyon wren in the canyon country, and we just followed bird note, and they were just playing a canyon wren. So I just heard one for real life, though, just yesterday.
Yeah, super, super. Yeah, it's been a while, so I thought it would be great to have you with us. And, you know, you successfully work with young people. You work with all kinds of people. You worked with me. I mean, that's a miracle in itself. How do you do it?
I start by being a human first.
Very good.
I start by being, I think the being a people, being in relationship first is what matters the most. And I always say that the most important thing we have when we're with each other, whether in a student teacher relationship or that type of mentor facilitator role, is I always say that the most important thing we have is our people. That And the second most important thing is the time we get with them. And the third most important thing is all the stuff I happen to know about that I might want to teach about. But really, the people come first.
I've heard that life is about relationships and timing.
I can't agree more.
So you've had a career that you've been at the right place at the right time. And
it's
for
true.
People that don't know you, you might want to just tell us a little bit about that, how you ended up with Wild Rose Education, because it's a public...
Benefit Corporation,
which is different.
Yeah, so I operate as an independent contractor, and Wild Rose Education is my little business, and it's a Colorado registered with the state of Colorado as a public benefit corporation. Basically, that just gives me a little bit of credibility that I'm doing out to make the world a better place. And I have been doing this independent contracting work in environmental education for 11 years. But if we look across my entire life, I've always been really curious about opportunities and possibilities and curious to hear what might be out there, and then saying yes to things that I wasn't always sure exactly what would happen or what the outcome would be. But I trust those gut nudges and feelings and say, yeah, well, let's give it a try and see what happens. And I'd say 95% of the time it's worked out pretty darn well.
All right. Well, there's a quote attributed to Teddy Roosevelt that says, nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care.
Oh, that's a yes.
And so I know that you care about what you do, and it's infectious to the people who are in your, I wouldn't call them classes all the time. They're like almost like salons. I mean, what's the word for it?
Oh, so I facilitate a lot of different things. Sometimes I'm a professor at a college. Sometimes I facilitate gatherings of community members for engagement and like civic discussions. Sometimes I teach classes for teachers. Sometimes it just depends on it. At the end of the day, though, we're just a bunch of humans, and we're all working. I happen to know how to convene people together and then facilitate something that's methodical and very intentional that hopefully brings us all to have a closer understanding of each other's and each other's perspectives. It might look different for all these different kind of environments and populations and audiences of people, but at the end of the day, there's a lot of common threads, whether I'm working with high school kids or older folks or in whatever context.
I think it was Lao Tzu who I'll have to paraphrase what he said, but he said basically, when the leader is successful, the people you lead will say, look at what we've done.
I agree with that. And I've been playing with these facilitation strategies where people leave really focused on having even more of a personal reflection of trying to associate with whatever we just did together, whatever we just learned, back to their lived experience and their lives. And ultimately, almost every time they start to write or talk about through a reflective process of their learning, all these other people of their lives come into their memory and into their reflection. And they start to realize that it's their part of a community, whether it's their family, their friends, former teachers, whoever it may be. And to witness that as a facilitator or instructor, I just feel like it's such a gift to be able to witness that process for someone who's really taking the, whatever it is we just learned about, whether it's environmental science or watershed science or whatever, and but then they start to see themselves as part of the story, and their whole lived experience has led them to that point. And they say that, the researchers say that that's one of the most important parts of the learning cycle is reflection, and really taking the time to really pause and notice that. And I've put that to practice for about the last 10 years, and it has changed everything.
Tell us a little bit about your organization, because it's a, you said it's a for what profit? I mean,
public
benefit corporation. Where did you get the name Wild Rose Education? I guess we could start there.
Oh, well, I love working in public lands and wild places. So that's kind of where the word wild comes from. And in 10 years, 15 or 11 years ago, when I was trying to made all this up, I was working on a number of public lands related projects. And I was like, that's such a part of my spirit and part of me. And then I did not want a place name that was specific to any one like geography, because I didn't know if I would move or stay, or, and I wanted something that would work everywhere. So it couldn't be named like Sopris or Crystal River. So
right.
Wild Roses grow all over North America and probably all over Europe as well, and Siberia and Asia. But anyway, Wild Roses. But also my middle name is Rose. So I'm Sarah Rose is my name. And so Wild Rose Education just seemed like a really, really good fit. And at first I was Wild Rose Consulting, and people would be like, what do you consult on? And I'd be like, I'm not sure. And I don't really like that word. And so I became Wild Rose Education, because I love designing these educational experiences and these, like, to design the whole process of how we facilitate. I think it's the how as opposed to the what that really excites me the most. Like, how do we help learners of all whatever age go from wherever they come from? They show up with all this previous knowledge and previous context, and it's all real and it's all true and it's all really valuable. So how do we go from wherever they come from through a learning process that gets them to have some ahas and understandings that they didn't have before that they can relate to and hold on to into their future? But that process is, I think, where my strength is in the creating the process. And I happen to know a whole lot of things about climate and science and water and all these other topics, but it's the how that I think is what kind of sets me apart.
And if you want to know more, you can go to her website. You just put in Wild Rose and Sarah Johnson, and you'll find it.
WildRoseEducation.com.
Yep, that's it. Yes, see, WildRoseEducation.com. And you enjoy the wild spaces and wild places, and you're wild sometimes yourself.
And some of the, just to say a couple things about what's going on with my work at this moment, is that there's some really cool courses that I've designed in the last couple of years. One's all about citizen science, and this is an asynchronous virtual course that people can take from all over the world. And so it's a citizen science course where they get to dig into whatever phenomenon they want to observe out in the world. And that's been really successful. I've got a course called Beyond the Ice, which is all about looking at kind of an overview introduction to the Arctic, because I happen to have done a fair amount of work in the Arctic space in the last 5 years. And so there's Beyond the Ice, which is another virtual course. And then this summer in June, I'm rolling out this kind of a new rendition of a climate educator course, but it's called Teach Climate Colorado, and it'll actually be in person at the Third Street Center for 3 days. And so I'm really looking forward to that. We get to work with our regional teachers across the area.
Well, there you have it. So there's some of the things you can participate in. Tell us a story or a little bit more about the Arctic connection.
Well, it was another example of me saying yes to something I had no idea what would happen.
Okay.
And one of our local community members and leaders, and this here, Susie Ellison, is as a mentor and friend, encouraged me to apply numerous times one fall in 2019. and to apply to this program called Polar Trek. And I was like, Susie, I don't know anything about the Arctic. And she said, that's exactly why you should apply. And I said, okay. Anyway, so I applied. I was selected to this very, it was a prestigious program called Polar Trek. And I got connected to the International Arctic Buoy Program. And I became an outreach specialist for the International Arctic Buoy Program. And all this was funded by the National Science Foundation. And I got to go up to the Arctic Ocean north of Alaska twice in the last few years, and have continued to engage in all kinds of different things around Arctic science and climate and people, Arctic peoples and communities. And so.
So I'll put it in terms of the fact, to me, you're a community leader, okay? And in my own experience, when I was, it's years ago, when I was with the Forest Service, and a gentleman came in with his son asking me if there were any projects the Forest Service had that he might get his Eagle Scout status from. And I told him what, you know, was available. And then he said to me, he said, well, do you know of any other community leaders I might talk to about projects? And it hit me after he left, why does he consider me a community leader? And I think part of being a leader is when you have something before you that needs doing and nobody else is doing it, and you step forward to do it, you lead the way. And I think that's something that everybody could be a leader if they really set their heart to it. But at the same time, unless you have that spark, which you have, and igniting that spark of possibilities is something you do really well. So,
and also it's listening for where there's gaps. And where there's kind of a missing piece that would, if only this puzzle piece was in place, all the other, these other puzzle pieces could perhaps function even more effectively. And so what is that missing puzzle piece or that gap? And then trying to formulate that in a way that is really like all, it's like really, it allows everybody that's involved on the edges and around it to rise together, I think is another to add to what you're saying about community leaders. Because I think it's easy to be passionate and to, well, maybe it's not easy, but it's, there are many of us who are passionate people and want to change the world for the better. But we have to be so careful not to be replicative and to also find ways to bring people in that are like, who else are we going to bring along with us? Maybe not on our team, but we're going to bring them along with us so that they're, we're all moving kind of down the river together. And thankfully, there's so many different people with so many different ways of being and thinking and seeing and doing with all these different skills and capacities. So I want to bring those people along with me, because if we were all the same, we wouldn't get much done.
Very true, isn't it? I don't think, sometimes you can't bring everybody with you, but when you do see that aha moment come in somebody, that light bulb comes on, that's really inspiring, isn't it?
Oh, it's the reason why I show up every day. It's like you don't have that experience every day, but when you do, it's like, oh, that's one of the reasons I do the work I do. And it's such a blessing and a gift to, again, to witness these experiences of other people, because it's ultimately their experience. And yeah, to be a witness of it is just, can be a beautiful thing.
I think it's in terms of spirituality to me also, that how do you get people who are the salt of the earth, who keep things going, who sometimes don't recognize their own talents and abilities, how do you reach them in a spiritual way?
Well, ultimately, we want them to believe that we believe in them.
Right.
I think.
Good
I think that's the. I think that's like the end all, like ultimate goal, because I think when people know that they belong and that they matter and that their voice matters and that their perspective counts and that it's true, and other people know their perspective is true to them, I think people. Ultimately that helps them kind of sit up straighter and feel a little more confident. And I think at the end of the day, people want to know that they have that whatever it is that they have that makes them unique is needed. in a community, and that community could be a lot of different containers. But I got Father Greg Boyle is a, I read a lot of his work recently and watch what he's up to out in LA. He's the Homeboy Industries priest who has helped so, I don't know, thousands, tens of thousands of gang members get out of gang life. And so much of what Father Greg Boyle teaches, and he's a Jesuit priest, he is that basically people, it all comes back to love and belonging. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to be a gang member to feel like you're unloved and don't belong. You can be an ordinary human walking around the streets of the Roaring Fork Valley. And I just wonder about what we can learn from these more traumatic experiences of gang life, but to bring those learnings into our experiences here where we live and where we have influence to our context of belonging and loving and maybe a lot less competitive.
Very good. You're listening to KDNK's Public Affairs Program for Land's Sake. Today our guest is Sarah Johnson of Wild Rose Education. Not to throw any water on what we're talking about, because but the fact is right now for a lot of people, we all, I think, wonder, you know, what about tomorrow? You know, what things don't always look so great. The Earth's biodiversity and ecological integrity is being lost at a rate that we'd like to see slow down. How do you keep people, especially young people, not despair of the future?
I'm known for saying in my classes that I teach to stop trying to do this all by yourself. Stop trying to carry the weight of the world on your shoulders, because it hasn't worked. It's not working. And I then try to pivot the thinking to how do we do this together? What if we used more we statements instead of what can I do? More like what can we do? What can we do together? And, you know, something I was reading recently, and it says, "May God grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, but the courage to change the things we can no longer accept. May we have the courage to contest complacency with compassionate conviction and stubborn hope, to do justice, love mercy, and always walk humbly with God." But that courage to change the things we can no longer accept, I think we can only do that together. And so again, it's noticing what is not being done already in the places where we are, in the communities, in the context that we have any kind of influence in, and noticing perhaps what is it that I bring with my friends or my family or my neighbors, what's my skill set and vocation and passion and energy. what do I bring? Maybe it's even a little bit of humor to the team or to the group. And then how does this group together try to fill that void of what's not already being done? And then who else can we bring along with us? And high school kids we can coach them to get there. And I think it works the best when we notice when we help them see what it is that they truly are, like, what is their capacity? And they're, as opposed to just telling them there's a whole lot of problems, but more so like looking at it from what do we have? What can we build from? Let's start with what we have. And we have a lot. Collective, like, we have a lot.
So. For sure. For sure. You know, you are a journaler, like I am. You like to journal. And does that help you to put your thoughts together sometimes to do what you're doing? I mean, journaling, there are a lot of people out there, I hope, that journal, and maybe some people would like to start journaling. What does it do for you to journal?
I carry around so many ideas and feelings in my body. Okay. And so journaling is a way to dump it out and let it sit over here on the side for a little while so that I can have a more clear heart and mind. Sometimes when I'm writing, I some things become more clear when there's, and, but like even just the other day, I tried something new. I was driving, so there was no way I was going to start writing.
Right.
And I was driving, I'd left the freeway, I'd left 70 and was going south on the Colorado River Road towards Fisher Towers and Highway 128 in Utah. And I could tell I needed to stop and journal, but I also wanted to keep driving. So I actually got out the voice recorder on my phone. And for the first time ever, I just talked to myself in my car. And now I have this voice recording of whatever it was that would end up in a journal. And just that process, it was similar to the process of writing. It got it all out of me, whatever, all this stuff that was kind of weighing me down. But that was a new experience to like talk out loud to myself. For that purpose.
I've tried that. It doesn't make me comfortable, but almost all of us have cell phones, so none of us have any excuse for not putting our thoughts on.
And it wasn't a very concise, it was the most raggedy, like, spewing of ideas, but that's what I needed, and it was helpful. Anyways, I got closer down towards the river, and I don't know, it was just a moment in time that was important.
You like poetry. Do you have any poems for us that inspire you at this point or not? You probably did. Do you have any in your journal?
Well, Mary Oliver is one of my favorite poets for lots of different reasons. And we were talking earlier about how do we help people notice their, I don't know, their capacities. And I don't always have this exactly the way Mary Oliver wrote it, but I looked it up. So let's see if I can. She writes in, and she's passed away, but she writes in this poem that's written in these stanzas. It's called Sometimes by Mary Oliver. And in stanza number 4, she writes, instructions for living a life. Pay attention. Be astonished. Tell about it. And then she goes on with lots of other stanzas. But pay attention, be astonished, tell about it. I feel like that is such a huge part of, it's kind of a backbone to a lot of how I show up even as a science educator. It's like, pay attention, notice what you see, write it down, and then talk about it. It's really the process of science. But anybody can do that with anything, whether it's observing the sunset or observing a baby child that is, you know, 6 months old and whatever. Or maybe it's an amazing meal that someone cooked. Or maybe it's just walking outside and noticing the wind blowing on your face. And I just feel like that presence, being so present. I think when you can be so present to notice and be humble enough and kind of lighthearted enough to be astonished and then brave enough to talk about it with somebody or in your journal or in a poem or however it may come out, I think that adds a lot of richness to the world and to our individual lives, but also to those we encounter. So you
teach people how to observe, but from that, you're a participant then in your own observations. You're a participant in what comes next by being astonished, by being alive, by being having agency.
Absolutely. And sometimes that astonishment isn't necessarily going to be beauty or joy or something that makes us feel better. We might be astonished and be angry and upset, but it leads us to an action, to do something, to talk about it, to bring it to our attention, to bring it to the collective attention. And I think that's also really important. And that's, again, it's not just about me, but I want other people to believe they can do the same. Because when people start to understand that however they see the world and experience the world matters, their perception of their experience of the world is priceless. And so how do we collectively pull all that together? And ultimately, it creates a better world for, I would hope, for everyone.
Absolutely. So you know, people, you point them in a direction, and then when that aha moment comes along and you have a people you're working with, the thing you really like is when they say, look at what we've done.
Yeah, I think so. I think that opportunity comes when I'm teaching people it, like in a class where we're actually physically together. Even in a virtual setting, when I'm teaching and facilitating learning, it can happen there too. And one of the most powerful, yeah, there's so many pieces that are so powerful, but that's that it's pausing to notice and reflect on what we have done together, that we can even articulate that awareness that we just did it together. So it's kind of this metacognitive thing. You have to think about your thinking, but to facilitate the opportunity just to pause and have everybody pause and notice what just happened for them and their experience of it is something we don't do enough of in a lot of different contexts. But if we pause long enough to notice what we just did and then pause long enough to listen to each other's perspectives on what we just did, that's when we get to realize that we can say, wow, we just did that. But often we just keep moving forward and skip that part.
We do, don't we? That's unfortunate. In the last couple minutes we have, what's on the horizon that you'd really like to do? If you had all the money in the world, what would you really do next?
Well, I'm going to probably spend money that I don't necessarily have. I got invited to go. I'm really excited. I am to expand. I got invited to Homer, Alaska, to a workshop that's put on by the Chugach people, the Chugach Alaska natives. And the workshop is all about, the audience is for people like me, educators and researchers who show up in native villages in Alaska villages that are full of native Alaskans who are outsiders, but are researchers or teachers. And they put on this workshop every year to help us outsiders know how to show up in a most respectful and graceful way. And so anytime I can learn more about how to be most gracious and yet also bring what I can in a space that is not my community, I think I learn a lot. So that's coming up in April. So I'm headed to Homer, Alaska. And that's
super.
Really cool for that purpose.
All right. Well, we want to have you back after you come back from Homer, Alaska. How's that sound? You've been listening to Katie and Kay's For Land's Sake. Until next Tuesday, April the 13th, next Tuesday of second... It's Monday. My show used to be on Tuesday, so
it's time change thing. It's messing with you.
I think that's it. I'm going to lay it on time change. But it's the second Monday of every month, so April 13th at 4:30. Tune in again, and I'm your host, Bill Kite. So whatever you do to Mother Nature, do it for land's sake.
Thanks, Bill.
Well, thanks for
and being congratulations
here.
To you for being named Citizen of the Year by the City of Glenwood Springs.
Well, thank you very
recently.
Much. That was quite a surprise for sure. And you're a citizen of the world yourself and a pretty top notch person. Thanks so much for being with us today.
All right, thank you. Take care.